Then next up reading of this book of A Card Contact of Arthur Burlett in 58. And we have come to part 17, Rivers and Fish Culture. After we had flown some 15 minutes, I saw a river right on the road we were flying. I could not understand how that river could be that narrow and extend so far in the distance like that, as I could well see for myself. Then I asked, how is it that that river is so straight and narrow? He reduced the velocity and descended in altitude, saying, they are enterprises. Where one ends, another begins. But what are those enterprises for? To irrigate deserts, since, as you said, you have no power plants here? Partly, yes, they are for irrigation, but the reason for them is almost exclusively for the raising of fish. I can tell you also, if it were not for the danger of flooding, all the rivers of a cart would be like this. But of whom are these enterprises? The government or private companies? They are of government and the people at the same time. For what do they have the incentive to raise fish here? The reason is that more than 10% of our alimentation of flesh is of fish. Is the flesh of fish so appreciated here? Yes, and besides that, it is an alimentation above almost gratis, free, I suppose. I thought gratis with all that fortune spent on the enterprises. Well, because it has the advantage of being produced, almost completely produced, in terrains occupied by nature, where we can not cultivate other things. So that was a short part. Next is 18, After Night, After Day. I was so exhausted that despite these new pisciculture enterprises being very interesting, I just wanted to end this dialogue because at that time I preferred to simply rest. I leaned back in the seat and was asleep in an instant. A cork understanding my condition did not try to wake me up. I awakened after the ship had already landed and was parked in front of his apartment. Then he touched me on the shoulder and awakened me. Despite my being not fully asleep during those moments of respite, I felt somewhat refreshed. Before entering, I looked at the sun. This when I was almost inside. As soon as we entered and waited for him to tell me to sit down, he spoke with his wife and son who were waiting for us there. I felt like I was in a dream. I thought, thank God for a few moments there I was able to sleep. At that instant, a cork turned, I asked, if it makes no difference, I would like to go and sleep. But wait, let us eat the meal first. Thank you, but I have no appetite. Then wait a moment, I will give you something to drink before you go to sleep. This something, I discovered later, was what had been sustaining me since my arrival. A cork brought me a cup with a dark liquid which I drank, trying not to taste, as it had a distinguishing flavor. He then took me to the room and, bidding me good rest, retired. I made ready for an instant without being able to think of anything and went right to sleep. I awakened, don't know what time, at midnight, with great thirst. I drank some water and laid down again. I slept some more, but I don't know how long. When I woke up this time, I aged all over, thinking it must be near morning. I got up, prepared myself and went out, vacating the room. I looked toward the window in front and saw that it was still dark. I thought a little bit and felt that going back to bed would be no good, since I was no longer sleepy. Not returning to the room, I dressed in the cloak with sleeves and went out into the terrace. Despite the cloak, I still felt the cold outside there pretty much, as with all the nights. But the beauty of the city compensated for the cold. I remained there until the sun extended its first rays above the horizon. I don't think there is anything more beautiful made by the hands of man than the city at dawn. I thought, if these people would allow me to take back a photograph of this city in these colors, with only that I could persuade the people to avoid an atomic war on Earth. Planted there as I was, I did not notice a cork when he came up behind me saying, good morning. I returned his greeting and continued, seems like you slept well. Yes, I slept the whole night. Didn't you feel it was a little long? Yes, but my tiredness was also great. When did you get up? Well, I got up when it was still dark and came out here to see the city. Then it was more or less two tenths that you came out here, about an hour and a half. Could be, I answered. I never saw the hours pass. I was so absorbed with the city there. Next part is part 19. And that is headlined Marine Recreation. Are you ready to travel a little today? O'Cork asked. My heart began to beat rapidly. Could they have decided to take me back to Earth today? Then I asked. To where? To a recreational city on the seacoast. This replied was a dash of cold water on my contentment. Yes, sir, I answered, head lowered. It is that the Son of the Sun has charged me to accompany you, since we remain here in my residence or in some other place. But what city is that, and why do you call it a recreational city? Well, let us go there and see. It is one place where you can rest. We shall spend the day there, as I have much to explain to you, and we can exchange ideas about Akkad and Earth. Very well, I said. As we went back inside and ate the first meal, after that Akkad picked me up a bag of medium size, and bidding goodbye to his family, we departed. We followed the road toward the rising sun. On the way, we passed above various cities. Every time we flew over a city, I thought, this must be it. However, as I saw no sea, it must be farther on. Suddenly, a cork said, look, I looked to the front. The sea still seemed so far away. As we got closer, I saw a beautiful city with a coast and beach in front of us. As we got closer, I asked, what wall is that that runs along the sea beyond the houses of the city? That is not a wall, he responded, smiling. Can't you see that it is a building. Building? I gave a look. A good look and saw that it was the same. At that altitude we were already overflying the city and we crossed above that building. We passed over the bay and landed on top of the building. It was not very large. It had maximum of 100 meters width, with 5 to 6 pavements from point to point. Now, the length, yes, I calculated it to be more than 20 kilometers long. It was not straight and fell off the curves of the beach, leaving a space of 500 meters between it and the sea. The city lay on the other side. It was narrow and the majority of the houses were small. It is well to emphasize that when I speak of small houses, I do not mean to signify that it is of only one pavement or of 10 meters. They were small in relation to that monster of 20 kilometers. It was more a city close to a building than a building within a city. Where we landed, there were, besides our ship, a great many others, and from moment to moment more arrived, except from one or another which descended in the city. All came to land on the terrace of that monster building. Up there one could walk from point to point to an elevator, since it was all only one sheet. A cork picked up the bag and said, "It is still early. Let us walk a little up here to see the city and the beaches." We were looking at the city on one side and seeing the beaches on the other. Despite it being early and the altitude, it was not cold there above. A very agreeable breezing was blowing. It was the warmest place I had seen on a cart. With slow steps we walked some 2 kilometers when we came upon a tunnel. A cork said, "Let's descend here." I looked behind and asked, "But how, sir, are we going to find our ship when we come back in the middle of so many?" "Ah, it's easy. Do you see those squares there?" "Yes," indicating one which we stood. "Those are the exact size of a ship, and all are numbered." "Oh, like that? But then, is there any danger of somebody robbing it?" "Absolutely not. Here nobody needs to rob to have one." "Are you saying that all who are here are all rich?" "No, nothing like that. I'm referring to a cart. Our laws here are different from those of Earth. I will explain a little better later." Satisfied with his explanations, we entered an elevator, this descent to outside the building, and we went down. Upon reaching the ground, we disembarked and went into a room that I judged to be an office. A cork pulled the paper out and handed it to a man who read it and returned it smiling. Then he took two small cartoons and gave them to a cork. They spoke a little more and the man still holding the paper suddenly looked at me. He turned back to a cork and they exchanged some more words. When we left and the man remaining there followed us to the door with his eyes, we went through a bar, an eating place, with some 1,000 tables, maybe, and come out on the other side. We followed a causeway ramped of the building and walked some 100 meters. At the end of that eating place, there was another which I saw ahead, and a corridor having rooms, bathrooms and toilets. I could not see directly, etc. When we went in there, a cork opened the door. Then I saw what it was. It was hardly room for the changing of clothes. Each room served some 100 persons, since around the walls there were room for each one to take care of his clothes. In each room there was a kind of urinal. A cork cut the bag in one of those places, but before that he took something out from inside, something that looked like a carafe, and we went out. Upon coming into the corridor, I saw two women coming out of a room on the other side of the corridor. I understood then that that side was for women. Thus we reached the causeway again. A cork gave me one of the cartons and said, "Take care of it." "What is this?" "This cartoon is something each one will need." "Very well." I did not want to ask for more explanations about it, because I knew more or less what it was for. Side by side with him, we walked some 800 meters, always along the side of the building. During the walk, I was observing everything. At almost 10 meters distance from the building, on the side toward the sea, there were two rows of trees, well canopied, planted at a distance of 10 meters, more or less, from each other. This was from one point to another of the building, under and between the trees, the ground was covered with banks of benches of all kinds. There were some examples of dangling type that hung from the trees and from frames of their own. Besides the trees, there was only sand to the water of the sea. That place was a veritable paradise. Concerning the building, the first floor was constituted only of juice bars, eating places and rooms to change clothes. The remaining parts were only of room and dormitories, and as far as I could deduce. We went into one of those bars and sat down. A cork asked for something to a youth who attended there. This one went to a balcony that ran from one wall to the other of the building and returned with two cups with water, as far as he could see, in his hands, and he deposited them on the top of our table and quickly left. A cork opened the carafe, and from it he proceeded to pour a ladle in each cup of the contents of the carafe. I reached for one of them. "What is this?" "It is water. With, I don't know what, because I don't remember what he called it." Continue. "It was prepared by my wife in the house. Drink it. It is still good, half sweet." We drank two more cups and left. From there we took some turns about until it came time for the second meal. We went into, I don't know whether it was the same eating bar, since they were all exactly alike to me, and together with a great multitude we ate the second meal. That was down on part 19. We have come to part 20, A Planet Without Money. And we go directly into that part for A Planet Without Money. After that we went to the trees and sat down comfortably on the stool similar to chairs that rotated. I put my hands behind my head and thus reminded for some minutes. But in that calm I commenced to reflect, and I saw in my mind an infinity of things that I was still satisfactorily. Briskly, I raised my body and remained seated, resolving to ask a cork to explain some of these things that I did not understand. One of these was that, since I had come to a cart, I still had not seen anybody pull out money to pay for anything. We had just eaten a meal with nearly 1,000 people and nobody had paid anything. With relation to us, I had some kind of explanation since we had that paper, which could perhaps be a form of requisition by the government, but the rest? To clear up this doubt, I asked, "What kind of money do you have here?" He raised up and sat in the same position as I, right in front of me, and said, "Money? We do not have, we have no money here in our cart." I almost fell on my back, stool and all. "But how? But how do they buy things and pay their employees?" He gave a sigh and responded, "Well, this is a very lengthy affair, but I will try to explain to you. A cart, if I do not already said this before, was all divided up into countries, and each one had their own type of government and money. That being the case, when they began to feel the problems of overpopulation, those better off commenced to acquire every palm over land, and thus those who had money obtained and owned more space than they needed to live, while those less favored by fortune were banished to the streets. This resulted in speculations, robberies, several wars, and all the rest. Why? Always because of the evils of money. The whole planet was an inferno. A few survived, and others in greater number died of hunger, misery, and pains. Then, when it seemed like all was lost, there emerged the greatest scientist of all times, here on a cart. And what did he do? He discovered that the means to take advantage of a very energy of the sun. What did that have to do with the money situation? Many things. Once discovered, he and two more of his followers invaded the arms which we still have. Was he rich or poor? Very rich, but he spent all his fortune in investigations and experiments which resulted in benefits for all. In what manner? In the following way. When he succeeded in inventing the neutralizer, he told nobody of his invention, but gave adequate proof of what he could do with such a weapon. He threatened all of the countries that if they could not find a common dominator for their differences, he would use the weapon. He presented a global plan for the salvation of the planet. Then all or almost all accepted and obeyed him. His first step was to abolish all of the frontiers, making all of a cart to only one country. The second was to level all of the cities to equal rights and obligations. To obtain this, he had to get rid of the money, and this automatically ended profits, speculations, robbery, usury, and many other things proceeding from money. Then he must have been some kind of dictator. No, he did not become directly the government, but nevertheless gave ideas to others who put them into practice. Certainly he depended on the support of some strong country. No, it is, as I said, 90% of the population of a cart lived in oppression and misery, and thus they understood his ideas and supported him. The remaining 10% could do nothing, and finally they accepted also. And as the people helped to install this regime, the same people had the right to select their governors. They proposed that the scientist be selected, but he could not accept. However, he indicated one son of his. That one was selected and became the first governor of all of Akkad. Since the scientist was called the man of the sun, thanks to his discoveries, his son was called the son of the sun. From this proceeded the tradition of calling our president the son of the sun. Aha, for that reason, that is it. I thought it was a sacred name. No, it is not, as you now can see. When and for how long is the governor of Akkad then selected? Every 3 years. It means Akkadian years. But how can you get along without money to buy or sell the things? How do you do it? Here nobody needs to buy or sell anything. There is enough work for those who are apt, that they can have all that they need or desire without the immoralities. Here it is a crime for anyone to refuse to work. We came to the conclusion that money is the work of the evil spirit. Without it, many evils are avoided. Are they obliged to work until after they are old? No. The people work so many hours per day or night, and for the hours that are left, they can go where they like, eat or drink in any public place without exigencies, and do as they please. In every year there is a period of rest. Then they can travel throughout all Akkad and see and do what they please, traveling by whatever means they prefer. For this there is enough available, which is furnished by the government. And they have more. What one citizen has, they all have, because here all that is produced obeys a global plan, such as homes, the ships, dress, alimentation, etc. Up to what age do they have to work? It is like this. Until 11 years, Akkadian years, they have to study. From there forward, they are going to work in a profession which was approved by the schools. They worked until 36 years, Akkadian years, and after that retire. Then they can stay in one place the rest of their life, or travel wherever they want, live in one fixed place, or live in a hotel or various hotels as they choose. They have all the assistance and attention that require for the rest of their life. Is this laws also for women? Well, the women also study up to 11 years, and after that they may marry and care for a home, and if they do not do that, they are obliged to work according to their profession. That was done on part 20. The next part is 21, headlined A Very Serious Conversation, and it is on a separate audio file.